The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. I am Seth Leibson. Our phone number is 602-508-0960. Going to get back to the issues of the day and whatever else is on your mind in just a few moments. But as promised, I told you I would tell you about what happened to my run for Congress. Got a lot of questions about that, and I decided I would just do it in one fell swoop here. As many of you know, I announced my candidacy to run as a Republican for what would be and is an open seat right here in Congressional District 9, the seat currently held by Kyrsten Sinema. She's obviously vacating it to run for Senate. I announced my candidacy just about a year ago, and in May of this year, I resigned both the chairmanship of a nonprofit I had long been involved in. You've heard me speak a great deal about one of the state's most prominent youth substance abuse prevention organizations, Not My Kid. And I resigned to focus my time and avoid any conflicts of interest, avoid any conflicts. I resigned from this here radio show. I need to tell you, the words cannot truly express my intentions here, how much all your support meant to me. There were so many volunteers, contributors, so much emailed and texted and social media support from so many of you. It just meant the world and beyond to me. As I say, I will never be able to find enough words or enough thank yous. So I put together, when I ran, I put together a team and a strategy, the best campaign chairman anyone could have. She was a volunteer who just put in a ton of hours. And we set about campaigning full bore. That, of course, included hiring a professional campaign consulting firm. And as would be standard campaign practice, that firm was contracted to develop and implement overall campaign strategic plans, provide ongoing strategic and tactical advice, assist with website development, social media engagement, assist with speeches, policy proposals, do engage in weekly and regular calls to review ongoing campaign plans, scheduling, and manage vendor relationships and services. Once we announced our campaign, we went to it. I spoke to numerous groups and at GOP organizations and PC and LD meetings, held several fundraisers. We cut a lot of social media ads, and I developed policy papers and positions with a lot of consultation from friends and associates and many of you. We had, I thought, a really great campaign going. And I can't gainsay the great endorsements we had either. Wonderful endorsements, both nationally, statewide, local. One of the most basic and obvious first bars to clear in running for office is, as you know, submitting enough signatures to actually appear on the ballot. It's so obvious it almost doesn't need to be stated, kind of like having a driver's license to drive or a valid social security number or tax ID number to get a job. I don't really know what the analogy would be to talking about having enough signatures to get on the ballot, because that would be the analogy. That would be the fact that would serve as an analogy for other things. It's that obvious. It's that basic. And as it turned out, I did not have enough valid signatures. When I found out this was the case, it was jaw-dropping. It was nearly unheard of, kind of like going into a doctor's office for a regular maintenance checkup and coming out with your eyes removed. Nearly unheard of, just totally unexpected. Plenty of other candidates not only running for other offices within this district, but several, all running against me for this office in the Republican primary, submitted more than enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. I did not. We were simply shocked. And why? Not only was it the most basic of things to have for a campaign, but during, throughout the campaign, on a regular series of conference calls, both me and my campaign chairman would ask our hired campaign consultants how we were coming on signatures. We were assured on multiple occasions all was going well and there was no problem. Indeed, some on the campaign staff even joked and japed about other campaigns having problems, but not ours. Well, the joke, as it turned out, the terrible, awful joke, was on me and you. The others had the signatures, and we did not. We were told we were doing fine, and I didn't know that it just wasn't true. We were not doing fine, and neither I nor my chairman knew that. We were misled. You, who trusted me in this campaign, were misled, and thus I had to withdraw from the race. I could go on and on about this, but this is basically where we stand. I am embarrassed about it, and I am ashamed over it. And I am committed to doing everything I can to give the donors to this campaign their money back. Yeah, when one donates to a campaign, there are no guarantees, that's for sure. And if I lost the race due to a gaffe or something stupid I may have said or a failure in a debate, that would obviously be very much on me, obviously. And if the political winds were headwinds that were so strong we couldn't overcome them, that would be a normal expectation of any campaign donor as well. Not having enough signatures is not a normal or anything close to a normal expectation. As I say, everyone was flabbergasted. We really just can't find the right words to describe it. As I've dug down and drilled down into how this possibly could have happened, I found other serious issues as well, issues and facts that will come out about the campaign consultation team I hired. So I am suing them. I didn't want to. I sure didn't want to. We asked them to refund the donors when we learned the news, and they said no. We sent an attorney demand letter asking them to return the money from donors, and they didn't even respond. So I intend to do my level best to restore what donors didn't even think twice about. Just getting me, simply getting me on the ballot. I was left with no other option. And now a lawsuit with 9 causes of action has been filed against Compass Strategies and its partners. I did not go into public service or communications or anything else I've ever done to be litigious, but I've been left no other choice for you. My conscience told me this was the right thing to do, and I've additionally been encouraged by some very experienced and well-situated political practitioners, community activists, officials, and a lot of donors and supporters to do this as well. We have a tremendously great group of lawyers working for us, and I want you to know, while there is no way to make this and the time and effort so many put into this fight fully right, it has been my commitment to do what I can to make as much of it right as possible and refund those who invested in this effort. I have spent much of the last several months amassing witnesses and evidence and experts for this effort and this suit. It is simply tragic to me to think about what happened here, because I know how much we put into this, but more so how much so many of you gave and put into this. So many examples. I'll never forget the waiter at a restaurant I was having dinner at who came up to me and asked what happened to my campaign. He was a volunteer on my campaign. There's nothing that explains or describes properly the heart in that. Or the email I received from a woman who said she had set aside $50 one month to buy a new pair of shoes and decided to give it to our campaign instead. Multiple stories like that that just keep me awake at night. But big investor or small investor, it all meant the world to me because you trusted in this investment for the most important of things, ideas, to make and keep our country better. We are talking about a supposedly professional team that affected a federal election here. After all, think about that. The lawsuit, I said, has 9 counts, and they range from fraud to breach of contract to negligence to conversion and beyond. I'll keep you all posted on all this. Sadly, it was, of course, avoidable. But the unavoidable, to do the right thing by and for you, is simply not an option for me. This is what I am working on. It is sad to me, and it's sad for me because many of you know and heard many times on this show one of the people I'm suing, and that's Sean Noble, one of the heads of Compass Strategies. I'll simply say this, though. As I look back over the campaign, one of the things I have peace over is there's really nothing I would have seen that I would have done differently, except with 2020 hindsight, one thing, and that was not hiring him or Compass Strategies. aside from them, I'm so proud of so much of what you and we did, and there's some comfort to me in that. I hope there is for you too. But with a lot of things flying and circling around Facebook and Twitter and elsewhere, I wanted you to know exactly what happened and what I'm doing about it. As I say, my commitment is to restore all of it to you. That is why I'm doing this, and I'll keep you posted. And of course, you're welcome to ask anything you like about it. In the meantime, I just want to thank you for your patience, your commitment, and your loyalty. In the interim, as they say, more will be revealed, and soon. It's not about me, but you. So I won't say much more about it unless you have questions. And again, from the bottom of my heart, for all, I truly thank you. Back to the news of the day when we come back. 602-508-0960. I'm Seth Leibson. He's Bill Clay, and we're going out with a little Sammy Kershaw. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. You want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Seth Leibson. Many of you who know some of my background know I've spent a lot of time in education. I'll get back to politics in a moment. We're going to have Moses Sanchez in studio shortly talking about his race for mayor of Phoenix. What a great human being. What a great American. What a great Arizonan. What a great tribute to the race, to our politics, to our city he is. But one of the things many of you know about me is, you know, my long and deep interest in and work in education. And it's back to school time, right? I found and stumbled on something that I thought you just parents might like. I have to say something about it as we go back to school. And it's about questions parents should be asking about their school, about their teachers. We're about through this election. It's not a great time in an election season to have great serious discussions of deep education policy. It's been foisted on us. We're going to deal with it, of course. But I think we need to step back and think about the basics that go on in our education system here in Arizona, throughout the country, of course. Frederick Hess is over at AEI. He's an education scholar I've worked with, researcher, former teacher, who I esteem greatly. He had a piece that just struck me, and I wanted to share it with you. 10 questions parents should ask before school starts. If you have others, I'm happy to engage them and promote them as well. But I just kind of liked this. People like lists. They like easy. As he points out, you know, when parents start a new school year with their children, they go to back to school meetings and can ask simple questions and get answers like, you know, decoding and social and emotional well-being and data-driven instruction and spiraled curricula and formative assessments, and walk away just totally unsure of what they just heard or if their child is in good hands. So here's the list of questions, 10 questions he thinks parents should ask of their schools, of their teachers, of their administrators at these back-to-school meetings to know if your child is in good educational hands. 1, what's the best thing my child is going to read this year? Isn't that great? Simple. What's the best thing? Put them on the spot. What's the best thing? And it would be good to know what the teacher thinks is the best thing your child is going to read that year. Someone like Paul Boyer would have an immediate answer to that. That's why I love having him on. 2, what one value is at the heart of our school's culture, and how does that show up on a daily basis? Every school has a culture. Every school has a culture. Some have more than one. What is the one that's at the heart of the school? 3, on a typical day, how much time will be spent on morning announcements, attendance taking, and standing in lines? It's a great question. The hours and minutes spent in school need to be subtracted from those long periods. 5, I love this. What's the one paper, project, or unit that I should really expect my student to come home excited about? A student should be excited to learn. A parent has a role. Parents have roles here too, even, you know, during the school day when their kid isn't there. They have a role because every parent is a teacher. What's the one paper, project, or unit that I should really expect my student to come home excited about? There should be excitement in education, at least one. 6, in the typical month, how many hours will be devoted to tests and test prep? 7. What was the most serious disciplinary issue at school last year, and how was it addressed? Great thing, especially in the light of all the school safety questions that have come up. Great thing, not just what was it, but how was it addressed? Your child's safety is a basic. It's a basic. You should be able to know about it. 8. How frequently should I expect to hear updates about how my child is doing? 9. If I email with a question or concern, how quickly should I expect to hear back? Supremely important. Schools, the attendant point to this question, something that we have long believed is super important in education. Schools' receptivity to parent input and interest. If the school is welcoming of parent interest and input, it's a good sign of a good school. If I email with a question or concern, how quickly should I expect to hear back? 10. What's the most important thing I can do to help my child be academically successful this year? Yes, every parent is a teacher. A lot of teachers are parents. Teachers should have expertise. They should be able to help a parent help them. I love that list. I love it. If you want it, you can go to AEI.org, but it's from Frederick Hess. Simply enough, 10 questions parents should ask before school starts. 602-508-0960. Ken is in Phoenix. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Seth. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm not good. I just turned on the radio, and I knew what was going on as far as you were coming on today, but had no idea what was going on. I've been with you from the very first day of the Seth and Chris show. I'm a rideshare driver, so I got the radio on all afternoon.
Thank you, Ken.
And I'm just completely in shock. I just cannot believe what I just heard you say. I'm so, so sorry. I feel horrible about what's going on. So I have a suggestion, and I have a couple possible questions if you are able to answer them real quick.
Go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Why don't you set up a GoFundMe account to try and get some of the money back to the small donors, the one like the lady put away $50 for her shoes. I'm sure some of the wealthy donors can probably wait and hang in there till your lawsuit gets complete, but what about a GoFundMe account?
It's a thought, Ken. I don't want to ask for more money to repay money at this point. I want those that are responsible for this and have, you know, misused as our lawsuit claims and overbilled and committed, as we allege, the fraud. I believe they should pay for it. I don't want to ask other non-responsible parties to deal with their irresponsibility and worse. But it's a thought we'll put in the back.
Okay, well, I completely understand.
Thank you, Ken.
If you do win your lawsuit, which it looks like you will, are they able to pay back the money that obviously...
My goal is to restore every dollar to every donor. That's my goal.
Good for you. Good for you.
That's my goal.
And my last question for you is, are you doing the show now by yourself? What happened to your...
Seth Leibson show is the new show. Yeah, no, Chris, as I... you may have missed it. I did a tribute to Chris and Robert in my opening monologue in the last hour. They are dear friends. They are great people. They are just... You're going to hear a lot from them, especially during this heavy campaign cycle and season. As I said, they're some of my go-tos. I go to, you know, experts. We all go to experts.
Okay.
They're two of mine. I
all
love
right.
them dearly. Salute them tremendously. They're great guys.
They were both great guests.
Yeah, they're great guys.
I didn't hear the earlier part.
Oh yeah, no, it's fine. But they're great. So. They're great. And you're going to hear a lot from them. I just can't tell you how much I appreciate them or you or.
I'm one of your loyal listeners.
Thank
I've been
you, Ken.
Since day one.
Thank
and
you,
I ain't
sir.
Going nowhere.
Thank you, brother.
Okay, you take care of yourself.
Stay close. Moses okay. Sanchez coming right up. All right, in the next segment, I want to come in with the driving part, with the drums and the whole bit. This is a song called Children of Sanchez. It used to be a theme song for Channel 12 News when I was growing up, and I think of it every time. You know the part. We used to come in with it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know it. You'll find it for me, Bill. That's what I want to come in with. It's Cowbell, and it helps me introduce one of the great Americans I've been privileged to meet, one of the great Arizonans we are fortunate enough to have here. He's running for mayor of Phoenix. He is Moses Sanchez. Welcome back to the studios, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you,
hopefully.
Seth. Appreciate it. Appreciate the introduction.
I have lauded you. I have promoted you, and I just love your story, Moses. Tell, before we get into why you're running for mayor, and before we talk about what your platform is in running for mayor of Phoenix, I just can't hear it enough times, but please tell our audience once again a little bit about yourself, how you grew up, how you came to be doing what you're doing, and who you are.
Well, my family migrated here from Panama. I'm an immigrant. I came to the United States when I was 5 years old. My family came here in search of this American dream, inspired by Ronald Reagan, from a brutal dictator named Manuel Noriega. And we came in the early 80s. My parents, no English, no education. And we set up our roots in Northern California. And my dad was just that typical immigrant father who's out there working, you know, 2-3 jobs. He's your busser at some of your restaurants. He's doing everything he can to provide for his family. And we all ended up doing really well, working really hard, and always seeking education and enlightenment, whether it was on-the-job training, whether it was formal education. All three of us ended up getting college degrees. That's myself and my two younger sisters. I joined the Navy right out of high school, so I've served now in the military for 22 years, with one tour in Afghanistan in 2011, 4 years active duty, and been around the world, really living this American dream that my parents were able to provide for us. And so now I live here in Phoenix, raised my family here in Phoenix with my beautiful wife, Dr. Maria Manriquez. She's a native from here. She's actually from Kearney, Arizona.
It's scary to be around you guys. You are such high achievers. I mean, my gosh.
She's got an even more humbling story, right?
When you hear her story too.
Yeah. But we raised our kids here in Phoenix, in Ahwatukee. And we moved specifically to Ahwatukee for the schools. The local public school system in Ahwatukee is phenomenal. The Kyrene School Districts, my kids went through the Kyrene School District, and then they went through the Tempe Union High School District while we were living in Ahwatukee. So when I got back from Afghanistan, I decided to get more involved in our community and ran for school board. I ran for the Tempe Union High School District Governing Board in 2012, and I won with the help of my amazing daughter, Shannon, who ran my digital marketing campaign. And really, when I ran for that school board, it was about being thoughtful and bringing attention to the issues that matter to our community, to our parents, our teachers, our staff, and our
taxpayers.
And you're
a teacher.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am a teacher. I do teach at South Mountain Community College. I was there in class earlier on this morning. I'm really excited about this semester. It's a new semester. I'm only teaching 2 days a week there, on Mondays and Wednesdays, for a few hours a day. I teach macro and microeconomics. I've been teaching there for about a decade now. And full classes, love my students, really enjoy being in the classroom, which is why I still continue to do it to this day. I do own a company. It's a digital marketing company called Nona's Marketing. Nona's is just my daughter's name, Shannon, backwards. And we started off with just me and her 5 years ago. Actually, this month we celebrate our 5-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
And today we're a company with 12 folks, 9 interns, just growing and just doing great things in our community. So I have a very unique background in that I am an immigrant. I speak multiple languages fluently. I'm a business owner. I'm an educator, and I am a veteran. And I couldn't have done anything that I have accomplished to this day without my faith and without my family. And those two things are very important to me.
Well, you said it all, Moses. We're talking to Moses Sanchez. He is running for mayor. You can go to his website, mosessanchez.com. And on the other side of this break, Moses, I'd like to talk to you about your reform ideas, why you're running for mayor. You've told us who you are. I love the story. I love your family. I love your energy. I love that you've stepped up to do this. We haven't had a candidate like you running for mayor for Phoenix in a really long time, and I'm so, as you know, excited about your candidacy. So we'll talk about that on the other side of this break. And the goings on at City Hall, it's amazing what's going on at City Hall. It's corruption, stagnation, blithe treatment of the kinds of things cities and well-managed cities should be doing. We should have more than two great councilmen on the city, and we should have a great mayor. That's my view. MosesSanchez.com is the website. He's stepping up for us. Let's step up for him. You can help him out And when we come back, we'll hear about his plans for our city. If you have a question for him, he'll take that too. 602-508-0960 is our number. Hey, Seth Leibson here. If you're thinking about saving money this summer, why not start by paying less interest on your credit card balances? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. It's an easy way to save hundreds to thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. LightStream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.89% APR with autopay, lower than the average credit card interest rate, which can be over 18% APR. You get your funds as soon as the day you apply. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate and no fees. So say goodbye to high-interest credit cards this summer and start saving with LightStream. My listeners can save even more with an additional interest rate discount on top of LightStream's already low rates. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Phoenix. That's LightStream.com/Phoenix.
Subject to credit approval. Rates include 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth Leibson. I am here with Moses Sanchez. He is a candidate running for mayor of Phoenix. You can go to his website at MosesSanchez.com. I hope you know Moses. I think our audience knows how much I think of you. You told us your biography, your autobiography in the last segment. It's a tremendously great story. It's an Only in America story. And you're just such a unique candidate and such a breath of fresh air for politics, not only in Arizona, but truly our country. And I'm glad you're running for mayor of our capital city. Tell us about why you decided to run for mayor and what you intend to do as mayor.
Well, this all started when the former mayor announced he was resigning back in October. And when he announced he was resigning, I started getting phone calls from a lot of people, a lot of business leaders, influencers, community activists. And all the common theme that you heard in these folks was that we really needed somebody from outside of City Hall to step in and fight for Phoenix families, fight for issues that actually matter here locally, issues like public safety, issues like infrastructure projects, and what I call quality of life issues. And we haven't had a mayor come from outside of City Hall in 30 years. And when you look at City Hall and look at what's happening, downtown has done great. I mean, you look at downtown. When I'm out in South Phoenix, the folks in South Phoenix, they point right to downtown from Central and they say, look, they've done great over there, but they've ignored the rest of Phoenix. When I'm up in Sunny Slope, the same theme. When I'm out in Maryvale, again, you hear this constant theme that this small group of individuals in downtown and City Hall have essentially ignored the needs and wants of the rest of Phoenix. And so after hearing a lot of folks going on a listening tour for the first 3 months of this year, we've developed our platform and we started to roll it out a couple of weeks ago on specific issues with smart solutions. And so essentially I'm running because it's time that we have someone who actually fights for the issues that are important to Phoenicians instead of listening to City Hall grumble and fight with the dysfunctional mentality that they have right now.
Tell me about what we've seen just now, Moses, most recently with the appointment of the new council members and how this is kind of emblematic of what's been going on.
So two of my opponents are former city council members. And when they resigned to run for mayor, their seats were appointed by City Hall, by city council members. And what you saw in this process is you saw over a dozen, if not two dozen, candidates step up to the mic and say, hey, we would like our opportunity to represent our community, whether it was in South Phoenix or out in Maryvale. And both opportunities for City Hall to bring in an outsider, bring in somebody who's fighting for their community, somebody from the community, what they ended up doing is they ended up appointing former City Hall staffers. This is... You can't make this stuff up. You can't write this. Yeah. This is like the status quo. This is what they do.
Yeah. Incredible. There was but one story I have seen all year in our major paper, Arizona Republic, on the growing homeless problem in the city of Phoenix. I know this is an issue near and dear to your heart. Obviously, it also makes up a lot of veterans as well as others. I wonder if you might just speak for a few moments about some of that and some of the neglect that's been going on in this city.
I mean, it's just a lack. It's the priorities. They got the wrong priorities. And homelessness is what I would categorize into our quality of life issues. When I talk about quality of life, I talk about our public pools, our public libraries. I talk about homelessness. I talk about our parks and recreation. And with regards to homelessness, I visited so many different nonprofit organizations that do great work here in the city of Phoenix. Circle the City, Phoenix Rescue Mission, Andre's House, St. Vincent de Paul. When visiting and speaking with these organizations about what the city has done well and what the city can do better, you hear this ongoing theme that you hear in the business community where City Hall just gets in our way.
Yeah.
Overregulation.
Yeah.
They put hurdles, yeah, speed bumps in the way, and they don't allow us.
They stopped the Christmas celebration in Arcadia last December, for goodness sakes. Do you remember this?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about Christmas celebration and City Hall ignoring communities. Right. South Phoenix has consistently told me that they used to have a Christmas celebration right down Central. Right. Now they don't have anything. I mean, these are just examples of City Hall either ignoring the needs and the wants of our community or getting in the way of organizations that do great work for us.
We're talking to Moses Sanchez, candidate for mayor here in Phoenix. He's happy to take your calls at 602-508-0960. A good friend of mine, someone I like a great deal, is Councilmember Sal DeCicco. One of the things he talks about often is the issues having to do with public safety, which is what I think a lot of people think about when they think about their city governance. Shortage of public safety, yeah, officers. I wonder if you might say a word about that.
A lot of people don't realize that there's a severe shortage of public safety, right, officers. I mean, we look at our city in the last 10 years since the recession, we've grown at one of the faster rates in the country, mm-hmm, right? But we have less police officers, less firefighters today than we did 10 years ago. That's a shame. I mean, that's just if City Hall has one purpose, it's to man, train, and equip our public safety and first responders. Man, train, and equip. And we've just ignored that. We're trying to figure out how do we get in the way of the president of the United States.
That's right.
National issues.
That's right.
Federal issues.
That's right. The previous mayor was running a national office.
They're running for the, yeah, next. A lot, right, of these, right, these city council members are running for the next election instead of focusing, instead of doing their job. Do your job.
That's it.
Be brilliant at the basics. The city provides basic services to its residents. We're not brilliant at the basics. We need to be brilliant at the basics before we can start trying to tackle complex problems out there.
This is one of my complaints about, you know, too large a government generally, whether we're talking municipal, whether we're talking national. When a basic failure occurs and we say things like, how could that happen? How could something like that happen? The answer is, when the government, at whatever level, whoever's responsibility, department, level of service, national or local, when they get involved in things they have no business being involved in, when they expand beyond their charter and their constitutional authority, that's how those things happen. They're focused on the things that they weren't elected to be in charge of, focused on the ancillary, focused on the irrelevant, focusing on their own pet ideas. Meanwhile, the things that make us say, how could that happen, happen.
I am floored by how many times I went through the budget hearing process this last year, earlier this year, and this is when residents, and they had about a dozen of these things, and I attended three or four of these things, and you hear the residents come up to the microphone and say, hey, this is what I'd like you to spend my money on. And how many first responders? We had firefighters going up there and saying, I'm using old equipment, broken equipment. We have failed as a city.
I want to, in our next last segment, Moses, talk about just a few more things, including, you know, the nettlesome, a little bit more on the nettlesome issue of pension reform. You teach economics. You know about this stuff. It's one of the things that makes major cities collapse, you know, the lack of attention to the pension issues. I want to get your thoughts on that. Again, if you have a question for Moses, he's happy to take them. 602-5080-960, and you can help him out by going to his website, mosessanchez.com. We'll be right back. That's the Children of Sanchez I want. Let it play a moment. There it is. Older Phoenicians will remember that used to be the intro theme song for Channel 12 News. I love it, Children of Sanchez, because we've got Moses Sanchez here. He's running for mayor of Phoenix. MosesSanchez.com is his website. I know you're planning to do a lot of things once you become mayor, Moses. Pension reform is a huge one. We stop doing stupid stuff. We stop having the debacle like Sheraton or the recycling thing we've recently gone through. We will have money for the appropriate things. It's not about the ability. It's about the will to do things. It's not about the ability to hire police. It's about the priority, for example, and the will to do it. One of the things that will take some will is pension reform, and I'd love you to say just a few more things about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, when it comes to pension reform, I think it's important for folks to understand that we really need to reassess the costs, and we need to increase transparency when it comes to our pensions. You can ask one city council member, how much do we owe in our pensions? And you'll get one number. You ask another city council member, and these are folks with staff, and they'll give you a completely different number. And then when you ask the actual city staff and their offices, you'll get different numbers depending on the different month. And it's incredible the lack of transparency we face at City Hall. So the first thing we need to do is we need to find out what the real numbers are. How much do we really owe? And how fast is that actually growing at? What kind of rate? On my platform, we talk about how we don't want to make any change to police, firefighters, to their pensions. There were promises made to them. We want to keep those promises. We don't want anybody, especially our first responders, worried about their pensions. But when it comes to actually addressing this pension, we see examples of success in cities around us. There are cities, local valley cities, that are addressing their pension situation by reducing the length of their payment from, say, 30 years to 24 years. See, the city of Phoenix took their pensions. It would be, I like layman's term in my economics class. It would be like taking your 15-year mortgage, right, and turning it into a 30-year mortgage and then calling it a savings.
Yeah, right.
And that's what the city essentially did. They just keep extending that mortgage and they keep calling it a savings without changing their behavior. I would do the opposite. I would do what cities around the valley are doing, which is they're reducing their payment structure and they're paying it down with every extra cent they have. That's what I would do.
Perfect. I'm just so excited about your candidacy. I am so glad that you threw your hat in the ring to do this, Moses. I want to encourage everyone in earshot to help your candidacy and your campaign out. This is a real opportunity, a real great opportunity to take a wonderful man and put him in an important position in our city as our mayor. Moses Sanchez. Go to MosesSanchez.com. As I say, he stepped up to run for us. And let me ask all of you to step up to help him. 602-508-0960 is our number. We'll be right back. Robert Robb is coming on from the Arizona Republic. He's going to handicap and talk about some of our races that we will be voting on Tuesday. It's gotten hot out there. I think Bob will turn up the heat even more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.